Speaking of which.
Okay. Back to the idea that perception creates reality here. That primary appraisal is your first look at a situation. You're evaluating. What's the situation like? Here are three possibilities. Is this a challenge? Is this a threat? Or is this a loss? If your primary appraisal, your first look at a situation says, hey, this is challenging, you're probably going to feel motivated. You're going to see opportunity. That's a good thing. This might be eustress. Right? You might have some positive emotions about it. You know, you get that sort of personal self-pep talk thing going. Hey, you know what? This is going to be all right. Yeah, I'm going to have to work at it, but it'll work out all right. That kind of stuff. That's a challenge. You see opportunities for growth, gain, some sort of benefit. Maybe it's even to help somebody else. That's the idea of a challenge. So you got energy. You're energized about it. But again, that's because you walk into the situation and you see something different than the person who walks in and sees a threat. Good quote from Andre Gide. One of the things that often goes with this quote, it's a little cheesy, but not even historically accurate. But what if Columbus looked out the door one day and looked across and went, nah, world's flat, I'm not going. Right? Instead of seeing threat, you know, people who explore, they usually see challenge. If you do see a threat, this is the anticipation that something bad will happen in the future. This is anticipation of a bad outcome. But the bad thing has not happened yet. This is the anticipation of something bad happening. But the bad thing has not happened. And here we get emotions like fear. We're nervous. We're uncertain. But with those negative feelings, they kind of get in the way of our performance. So with threat, we anticipate that something bad is going to happen, but it has not happened yet. The next picture is silly. I'm quite certain it's Photoshop, but it's fun. That's a good example of threat. Something bad is going to happen, but it hasn't happened yet. It's got to be photoshopped. But that is like the unluckiest person on the planet. Okay. The last primary appraisal, the third one that we'll talk about briefly, is harm or loss. And in this case, the bad thing has already happened. With threat, you're anticipating. With harm or loss, you're just reacting. Not that I want to dredge up any bad memories that you may have, but if you ever got that phone call about that unexpected death in the family, that's a harm or a loss. You didn't see it coming. There was no anticipation. You just got bad news. The event happened, and you react. And that can come with equally negative emotions, including sadness and despair. So again, we're looking at this primary appraisal, your first initial subjective evaluation of a situation. It could be one of challenge, threat, or loss. Clatteris just went on to point out that stress, that reaction, it's not just person,
or the situation. It has to be a combination of the two. For the average person, you're not just going to suddenly have some stress reaction out of the blue. There are exceptions, but generally, it doesn't happen. And a situation itself, there's no stress. Right? The sky could be falling outside right now, but we don't know it, so there's no stress. You walk out into it, and now there's an opportunity for the stress reaction. Lazarus was saying, it takes two. It takes both things, the person and the situation. Do you know anybody, and I may have mentioned this before, but do you know anybody who's generally really calm? Okay, so let's say right now the sky's falling outside. We all go outside, and that person is here. That really calm person looks at him and goes, oh, that's messed up. It's probably not good. What time is it? I'm hungry. Right? They just don't really. So where's the stress? Do you know that person who, I mean, if something is moved just a little bit, they freak out. I mean, they freak out at just about anything. Right? They go outside, they're completely loose, right, in that situation. We have to combine the two things. There's the event that there's this person's interpretation of the meaning. That's another thing that Lazarus pointed out. Sorry, the example there. If you're like me, I'm an arm's length personal space kind of person. And that doesn't mean like I want people far away or anything. Because when I'm out in public, I'm walking through the mall and there's somebody like right on my heels, that would bother me. Okay, if I'm standing in line and the person's just inching up a little too close, I kind of want to find a way to kind of move and orient myself so I'm not quite so close to. That's just me. But what happens if you live in a place where the population density is huge? There is no wiggle room. Going to open air markets in like Bangladesh would freak me out. Not because of the place, but just because I'm in there with all these people. I don't care who the people are, there's just too many damn people. That's me. Right? Population density is a great thing. It depends on your perception. It is what it is. There's the situation. If you're used to it, it's no big deal. If you're not, maybe it is. Perception and the event. I'm sure none of you have ever felt this. There's no pressure, right? Yeah. We should probably just skip this because you guys. Anybody here ever feel pressure?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, sorry. What pressure? What's pressure? Come on. You experience, what are you talking about?
Do well in school.
Okay, to do certain things.
Yeah.
Yep.
In psychology, when we talk about pressure, we talk about performance and conformity. How many of you feel pressure? I'm not talking about motivation. I'm talking pressure, like you gotta get an A. Anybody here gotta have a 4.0?
No.
3.9? Okay, 3.8. Okay. Right. Okay, got a pass. I grew up in Canada. We don't do GPA or whatever. So what's pass? 2.0? I don't even know. That would be pressure to perform, right? I've had people take this class who are kind of in like dramatic arts and that sort of thing. And in those moments, when the kind of curtain opens, you got to be on, right? You got to do it right. Right? It's pressure to perform. Conform is simply the idea of go along to get along, to fit in. Those are two big sources of stress, and that's pressure is sort of a source of stress. Right, okay. Frustration, I'm sure another thing you guys know nothing about. Frustration comes when you try, and you try, and you try, and you
continue to fail. You put forth your best, most earnest effort, and it doesn't work. That's frustration. With both pressure and frustration, you'll never guess what I'm going to mention. There's the damn mirror again. How many of you are your own worst enemy in terms of pressuring yourself, expecting of yourself, right? And also frustrating yourself. Now, sometimes the situation is limiting. I mean, you come by it honestly. You try and you try and you try, but the situation's impossible to navigate. You can't win. Okay. The trick there is being wise enough to recognize that your efforts don't match the situation, and it's okay in that moment to cut your losses. If the situation is such that you cannot go outside, stand up against this building and move it. Start pushing, come on. You can't, right? Well, in that moment, it would be very easy for you to say, oh, guy's nuts. What's the hell's the point? It's not going to happen. That's okay. The trick is understanding that in your relationships, that's a much trickier one, right? Recognizing where you do not have influence, so cut it loose. That's tough. Frustration, have you ever been in a relationship where you tried? Try and you try and you don't get the result you want. In that moment, if you've been there, or if you haven't, you will be there. Chances are your effort was designed to change someone else. And you were getting a lesson on, you can't. If they don't want him, it's not going to happen. So sometimes frustration in relationships comes that your efforts are ill-aimed. Going to happen. People who have lived in alcoholic systems sometimes come to know that. Remember, perception creates reality. How you look at things. How many of you would say that you are very busy? Right? Time management is tough. You've got so many things going on. That's one perspective. Here's another. My sister, who I adore, is very busy in her world. To the rest of us, she's just disorganized. Dawn says, I got 6 things to do. Those 6 things should take about 15 minutes. It takes 3 days. Perspective, right? I'm not calling people names here. I'm not picking on my sister. What is your perspective? Right? Is your perspective accurate? Another source of stress for folks is conflict. And I'm not talking about you're fighting with somebody kind of conflict. I'm talking about looking at a situation and determining what does this situation mean. Remember, primary appraisal, you need to assess the situation. Well, here are the situations. One type of conflict that relates to the type of situation is called an approach-approach conflict. In this case, there are 2 things from which you must choose. 2 possibilities. Both are good, but you can only do one. 2 opportunities. They're both great. You want both. Only have one. Wouldn't it be nice to have lots of those kinds of conflicts? It would seem like that would be a nice thing. It almost seems like, well, what's the problem here? Right? No matter what you choose, you win, so how is that a problem? People get stressed out about this.
When I want both, why can't I do both?
No focus. It's on the wrong thing. You already know you can't.
The situation is such that you must choose one or the other. You cannot do both. But what does the person think?
But I want both.
You're an idiot. The situation is limiting. You cannot. You must choose one. And that'll freak some people out. That is actually a conflict that leads to stress in some cases. Two desirable outcomes, you can only pick one. Flip that over. Two possible outcomes, but both are bad. One of them's gonna happen. The nice thing here is that you actually get to choose which. The choice is a big deal. Have you ever been in a situation where there is no choice? You realize that choice is nice. But in this case, the outcome's bad either way. There are a ton of old sayings about this avoidance-avoidance conflict. Damned if you do, damned if you don't. Stuck between a rock and a hard place. Choosing the lesser of the evils. Can't win for losing. It got all these old sayings about that kind of conflict. Right? Two potentially bad outcomes you gotta pick. Either way, it's not gonna be good. But you get to pick. Choice is a good thing. Even if the outcome sucks. Approach avoidance. Note there is a difference here with approach. And avoidance, there are two outcomes, two situations. Approach avoidance is one situation, but it has an upside and a downside. Here are your proverbial pros and cons. An approach avoidance conflict. One situation with an upside and a downside. Your company is restructuring. Rather than getting laid off, you still have a job. There's the upside. But we're relocating you to a place you do not want to go. One situation with an upside and a downside. Upside is, you keep your job. Downside is, it's in a place you don't want to go. I don't care if that's a suburb or a different city or a division in the company, whatever. Right? Upside and downside. Multiple approach avoidance, that's more common. We have all of these kinds of things going on all the time. We've got lots of pros and cons sorts of situations. Multiple approach avoidance situations. Any situation you get into, you can probably think of the pros and cons. We got that stuff going on all the time. And it's more likely that we have multiple approach avoidance situations in our lives at any given moment. So as it says, you evaluate. Now, how do you think? There is something, I think it's coming up, but I'm thinking of it now, so I'll mention it. We have what we call explanatory styles. Explanatory styles, that's the optimism and the pessimism. Are you more of an optimist or a pessimist? And how will that influence your going through a situation trying to identify the pros and the cons? I often talk about learning about people, just how they do things, the words they choose, how much projection they use. I look for different things. If you ask somebody to evaluate the pros and cons, and they immediately just start rhyming off everything that's going to suck, you're telling me a lot about how you think. You might get to the pros, you might not, it doesn't matter. You just immediately launch into how everything's horrible and awful, and this is going to suck, and this is bad. You're telling me all about how you think. Maybe it's just your mood. Maybe it's how you think. The last little bit tonight is going to be about other personality-type characteristics, other aspects of psychology that will influence how able you are to basically tolerate stress, and that will eventually transition us into talking more about coping. If you remember when we were talking about type A behavior and its relationship to health, I told you that's that impatient, competitive type person, but there was also a thing on hostility. And I told you, type A personality, more likely to have a heart attack, also more likely to recover. But the problem isn't being impatient and competitive. It's when you combine that with this hostility piece. And they've done research where anybody who just has this, forget the impatience or competitive, don't worry about that at all, just the hostility piece, this is the risk factor for coronary events. And I told you last time, these are folks who expect to get screwed by others. They do not trust others, and they're cynical. It's not good for your health. Whether you come by that hostile approach honestly, whether it was learned or whether you just kind of got that way, it's bad for you. It is unhealthy. Aggression. Already kind of mentioned, guys, when they get stressed out, they tend to aggress more. Women tend not to aggress as much. A lot of people will just say, though, that men are naturally more aggressive. That's not true. It depends on the type of aggression we're talking about. Physically, yeah, men tend to be more aggressive. But there's this thing, and I might have mentioned it before, the idea of relational aggression. Right? When you're gossiping and spreading rumors and not including people, that's relational aggression. Women tend to do that more than men. So when you think about stress tolerance, those who are more aggressive are less stress tolerant. This is a characteristic we have not talked about. I don't believe we have. But it's an important one. This is a good personality characteristic to have. Hardiness. This is what we would call a protective factor. It's like a buffer against stress. Hardiness is made up of control, challenge, and commitment. The control part basically means that you have an internal locus of control, the idea of what happens to me is up to me, that kind of mindset. Challenge is that when you do your primary appraisal, you're more likely to see opportunity than threat. And commitment is more of that get it done kind of mindset, the more conscientious kind of mindset. You put those three things together, and that's actually a nice sort of inoculation against stress, sort of a protection against stress. Second last point there needs a little explanation. Not willing victims of change. That doesn't mean that somebody with this hardiness characteristic doesn't like change. That's not what it means. It simply means that they want to participate. If there's going to be a change, if there's going to be a different kind of outcome than expected, that they want to have some input in what's happening. Okay? So it's not that they're just going to fight the change. They just want some say-so in what happens, and that fits with the idea of internal locus of control. What happens if he's up to me? I want to participate in the outcome. So that's what those last 2 points kind of mean. There it is. Okay. Explanatory styles. These are personality characteristics when we talk optimism and pessimism. As I'm sure you know, just intuitively, an optimist is somebody who expects good things to happen. Please remember both the optimist and pessimist. This is a mindset. It can be wrong. A lot of people say, oh, being an optimist is just people running around with rose-colored glasses on. Well, sometimes, yeah, optimists are wrong. Pessimistic is realistic. No, pessimists can be wrong too. But these are mindsets. This is how people think. This is how they anticipate outcomes. And guess what? Optimists tend to be healthier. Running around thinking that the world is awful and broken and sucks and people are stupid is bad for your health. Because it's just a chronic state of stress for you. If you think people are stupid, when are you not influenced by people? Oh, I'm sitting at home alone, I'm just watching TV. Who the hell's on the TV? People. And who produced the show? Stupid people. Right? You can't get away. You think people are stupid and bad? You're screwed. Right? Pessimistic is realistic. You're also digging your grave. It's not good for you. People who are optimistic, they're healthy. Whether they're right or not isn't what we're talking about. They are healthy. Now, that happy though, here's stress and health. some interesting ideas for you.
Remember the thing upon the previous, or one of the earlier slides, about Hale saying 80% of illness relates to stress?
Now, depending on when you printed out your PowerPoint, the numbers may be a little different, because I just fixed this. If you've got some 30-some-odd percent on the chart, it's wrong. This is on your text. Okay, this is on your text, the most recent version. Heart disease, leading cause of death. Guess what? A big part of heart disease? Stress. I'm not quite sure how else, and just going through all these things and talking about it, people don't always realize, okay, why is he talking about exercise? Like, this isn't an exercise class, blah, blah, blah. Physical stuff matters. The psychological stuff matters. The two are absolutely related. And I hope I'm doing well in making that point. Mind your psychology, mind your stress. In your text, they talk about this, so I just want to mention. The short story is they're not sure. Does stress cause cancer? The quick answer would be no. They can't prove that. They can't. Can it contribute to? Yes, indirectly. Stress, we know, very clear link between increased stress, lowered immune system functioning. Lowered immune system functioning sets you up to be vulnerable for all sorts of gobbledygooks getting into the system. Right? All sorts of bad stuff. So the things that can, the bad cells and that sort of thing that can cause cancer, if your immune system is reduced, those bad things can proliferate and grow and spread. So can the flu virus, so can a lot of different things. And you could just end up with some goofy bacterial infection, who knows, right? So they cannot say stress causes cancer, it's not a direct link. But it is a risk factor for many types of physical problems. Wounds heal more slowly if you're stressed. People who are stressed out are just more susceptible to, like I call them, sorry, cheesy, but the gobbledygooks, the pathogens that are out there. Don't write this down. I'm not going to test you on this, but I remember being at one of the many events in Toronto that we got sent to, and a number of the public health folks, the nurses that were there, it was on a particularly cold day of January or February in Toronto, which usually isn't all that cold, but it was really cold. And they said, you know, with all the colds and stuff going around, don't be afraid to, when you're outside, to take a few really deep breaths. What are you talking about? It said most things that are like in your system, they don't like cold. So breathe the cold air. I don't know if that's true or not. I never looked it up, but I thought it was interesting in terms of colds and that sort of thing. People want to stay in the house and bundle up and all that sort of stuff. No, most things like warm and wet to grow. So suck in the cold air. Check that out, by the way. I don't know if it's true. Chronic stress can be a contributor to, or it can make worse, other issues. Can contribute to or make worse high blood pressure, hypertension. Angina, chest pain, caused by ischemic attacks, lack of blood flow to certain tissues. Arrhythmias, strange heartbeats, right? Irregular heartbeats. Irritable bowel. There's memory again. Stress messes with your memory. So again, stress lowers immune system functioning, and that can lead you to being at higher risk for physical problems. And last but not least here, and there is an end note to this, so don't just run and pack up. When we want to assess somebody's level of stress, there was an old measure called the Social Readjustment Rating Scale. developed in the late 60s. And basically what it did was it listed a lot of common events that people go through. Everything from marriage to divorce, birth of a child to the death of a child, getting a job, losing a job, you know, having to move, choosing to move, all these different life events. And they rank ordered them. They rank ordered them so they weighted them in terms of most stressful to least stressful. Vacation is on the list. Christmas is on the list. Right? Getting married, going on, you know, fun things are on the list. And what it asked you to do was, it simply said in the last year, how many of these things have happened to you? A certain. And then we added up sort of the rankings. That's all well and good. But it left one really important thing out. Let's say you got a divorce in the last year. So let's say you're doing this for him and you think, yeah, I got divorced 6 months ago. And you circle that, that carries a lot of weight on that particular form as a stressful event. So it's going to obviously lead you to have a higher score because it's a heavily weighted event. It didn't allow you to rate how significant it was for you. It just gave it a number. That's a problem. Because you know what? There are some folks who get a divorce and it's because of infidelity and nasty things going on, and they're really sad. They might be devastated by it. It's bad. And then there are some people who have been in an abusive, long-term, horrible relationship, and the divorce finally goes through, and it's like, yes. They're happy about it. Just saying, here's the weight, doesn't allow you to have that interpretation. It doesn't allow for an appraisal. So they started to realize, you know, the form's not that great. A lot of people coming out looking like they're going to grow three heads because they're so stressed. So an updated version was made called the Life Experiences Survey. I posted that online. If you've been online in D2L in the last few hours before class, you probably found it. It's posted there now, right below the PowerPoint. I'd just like you to open that file, print it off if you like, read it. You don't have to complete the survey or anything, but I would like you to read through that, see what's on the survey, and just notice that for each item, now you could, rather than just circle it like, yeah, it happened to me, for each thing that happened to you, you could say on a scale from -3 to +3, how bad or good was that event that happened in the last year. It allows for you to say how big, bad, and awful, or how good that event was. It allows for a primary appraisal. It's a significant improvement to that particular assessment. Having said that, behaviorism assignment, if you didn't grab it, is over here. So thank you for your patience and my lackluster performance here. We'll see you next week.